Hi, everyone, and welcome to Seek Sustainable Japan. I'm JJ Walsh here in Hiroshima, and today I have the pleasure of talking once again with Bern and Mitsue. Thank you so much for joining from Noto.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Now, today we're going to talk about your experience. Unfortunately, you are among many people in the Noto Peninsula area that has really been devastated by this horrible, serious earthquake at the beginning of the year. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But I just did some research and realized the last time we talked was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And you were just launching a new project focusing on Shojin Yori. So tell us a little bit. Is it continuing? What are your plans for that before we start talking about Noto?
Yeah, I mean, the cooking part of the Shojin Yori project started way before that and continues very much so. And we also here in our house in Kurushima had many occasions to serve Shojin for guests and friends here in a hopefully authentic way. We do so also in about a month or so in Kanazawa. A friend of us invited us to cook in his hotel, basically, for a small number of guests, and looking forward to that. So yes, so the cooking part is continuing throughout the years. And the other project you're referring for is a documentation project, I think, which we started, I don't know how many years ago, maybe 4 or 5 or so. Mm. And we gathered quite a bit of material and are eager to continue. It paused now a little bit because partly of the current situation with the earthquake, you're sort of overwhelmed with other things. But yes, that's also to be continued and worked through and so on. It's was originally meant as a long-term project, and it truly is a long-term project. So.
Yeah.
But well, yeah, we are on it.
We have the background right now. Mitsue, we have talked with you in the series about your beautiful photography. Your Miksan, and we're going to see some of your amazing photography today as you have become kind of a journalist documenting what's happening around you in Noto as well. And Bern, so much passion for Shojin Yori. Anybody who knows Shojin Yori in Japan is the Buddhist vegan food, but done to such a beautiful, high caliber experience. I'm so glad we can talk again. I'm so sorry that it's a sad situation to talk about today, but I'm so happy to hear that you are continuing with your passion for Shojin Yori and developing that and documenting the chefs around Japan. That's a wonderful project.
Yeah. Mm, thank you. That's right. And then I think that, you know, Bern's passion to create something nutritious and then with care with what's available became quite a catalyst, you know, when we started to organize takidashi, it's called in Japanese, to cook a healthy meal for the community. So it started in maybe in mid-January.
Yeah, about 2 months ago.
And then with the chef in the like-minded, and then we started with the, donated vegetables, rice, and then, you know, yeah, that's right.
So yeah, that's that image shows, of course, it's always a team effort, so that shows one selection of people active in it. It's a changing. This is another group. This is actually with Kidarak-san, who I worked with before, who holds whatever he holds, tamanegi kana. So we're basically creating meals for the community to be delivered to those which are still, since over 2 months now, in those makeshift rescue centers. There's yet another set of people. And also to others in need. I mean, some came back to their houses, and but often old and alone. So we try to reach out to those fellows as well, so that they at least occasionally have a freshly cooked, healthy meal, because otherwise we are still without running water. It's for many people a very daring situation to, and then they fall back to the most simple, seemingly convenient ways of feeding themselves, often not very healthy, certainly not in the long run. So we try to make a difference there. Also to be continued.
Yeah, and having warm food that's healthy and nutritious and so comforting in such a difficult time is so important.
Yeah.
And you using your chef skills, I know a lot of chefs, like you said as well, were volunteering. A World Central Kitchen as well was there serving up food. It's a real important part of supporting people in need, right?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we also experienced many, sometimes pretty spontaneous teams coming up from other prefectures or, you know, driving for hours and hours. And with bringing everything they need to create some food for the communities here. And that's really encouraging to see, and I'm sure also highly appreciated by those in need, that they get some different taste. Some even just came to brew fresh coffee, for example. I mean, very simple things. Or tea also. Some people did this tea, arranged for a tea ceremony to serve matcha to people, which of course is not everyone's cup of tea, as they say. But for those appreciating that, they didn't have a chance to for the last 2.5 months or so. So it's quite, these very, very simple things are quite important in the end and meaningful when it comes down to situations as we are in now.
Yeah. Let's start a little bit with your experience. Bern, you had this beautiful sake cup that you shared. You were about to share a New Year's greeting to everyone on your Instagram.
Yeah.
And then your sake cup was shattered amongst so many things. Tell us what it was like for you guys personally.
Well, we were in the house at this table in this room when it started, and as maybe I can say, as usual, I thought it will be okay. It's not so, but Mitsui immediately pointed out my teapot usually balancing on the kerosene stove to keep it warm. That will fall. And I said, oh, no, that's fine. But it did fall. And not only it fell, but everything else as well. Mm. So it became pretty clearly, pretty soon clear that this is a really serious one, totally different magnitude of compared to anything we have experienced so far, or most people have experienced so far. It was a 7.6 magnitude. That's massive. And yeah, I don't know. You run and switched off the stove. And I mean, one doesn't think really in situations like that, right? So I was running into the kitchen to try to hold up the shelf where all the parts of the collection of the ceramics and lacquerware is in, which was pointless and which was flying anyways. But anyways, that's what I did. So that was my experience.
Yeah. So he ended up, you know, standing with those dishes kind of
raining on me.
Yeah, thank goodness he didn't get injured. So that was good. But for me, I managed to turn off the stove, and then I just watched, you know, the house, because it's this is about 130 years old house, and then so the beam was really swinging like this, and it felt like it was such a long time. So at one point I thought that just kind of it went beyond my the usual thinking. It was something that I never thought that it would happen. So yeah, and then you know we
grabbed some
look
stuff
for each other and then
so it was then at some point, you know, with this, I mean, it's really, you can't imagine, no one can imagine how much a building can move and still somehow manage to stand relatively upright. It's unbelievable. I mean, the forces are just unbelievable. The whole area where we are here is the one which was lifted up most of all of Noto, about 4 meters, they say. I mean, if you think about that, then it's almost impossible to imagine that any man-made structure still stands. I mean, it's really, imagine the forces. It's quite impossible to wrap one's mind around. But anyway, so it was very, very violent. And then eventually it was clear we have to get out. And we grabbed some stuff and went out. And then eventually up to the rescue center, because it was immediately a tsunami warning. Because the sea was so far out, though, they thought, eventually we'll come back, which it did to some degree. But we were lifted so far up that the tsunami didn't make any difference, really.
Right. And in meantime, we got
The image now shows the former harbor, obviously dry now. So and you see sort of the line where the water used to be, the white thing there, that's that line is where the water was, and so it's quite a bizarre and bizarrely beautiful new landscape one can walk on, like this exactly. So this all used to be underwater a couple of meters, and now it's part of my daily beach walk. So weird, strange, beautiful landscape, but it tells you also something about the forces of nature, really. And I guess to me, when you ask about the experience, at least reflecting afterwards on it, is you really realize how small you are, how insignificant what we are doing, sort of. So it puts things in relation, in once one experience in this physical way, the forces. And yeah, what you have now in the image, that's in Vajima, central Vajima, an area which was beside hit by the earthquake in the aftermath. There was a massive fire which destroyed most of the district around the famous traditional morning market. It's a devastating. We have been there maybe 2 weeks or so after it happened, and it's incomprehensible. You can just even if you see, and we saw videos and photos before that, but if you actually walk through that, it is just a degree of violence is simply incomprehensible. Quite a sight.
And for your house, you're in your house right now. It's still standing. Yeah. But you lost your kuda, your storehouse, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's collapsed. And actually next week, if the weather plays, that's sort of from the roof, the situation. So it collapsed halfway onto our house, but also onto the street towards the neighbors. So that part we removed already, and we probably plan to. This is actually Robert Mangold in the picture, who I or we want to shout out a big thank you. I mean, he was hero like coming and really pushing us also to work. This is during the removal of the backside of the kura, which it was actually raining at that day. So the whole backside collapsed, and everything is sort of wedged together. So it's sort of a funny thing. But with that, we are still among the few who can still live in their houses. So many, many houses collapsed entirely, and people have no place to come back to. It's quite dramatic, and they were in our immediate neighborhood. They were built the same way as our house, and so we had the experience that this was a close call. Ours could have collapsed too, and then there's no way getting out.
So yeah, when we see completely collapsed houses, you know, we feel that it's not, you know, it could have happened to our house. And then, you know, after we had aftershocks, and then we felt quite nervous about being in the house. But the evacuation center is quite, it's really, it was in the first weeks, you know, it was jammed with people. So we supported the community kind of from our house, but we realized that perhaps, you know, we need to clean up our house, and then, you know, do little by little cleaning up. And then, and like Bian said, you know, when robot came, and then really encouraged us to take, you know, one thing at a time, and then, you know, take care of, start taking care of the house was a big step. And then our dear friend Lauren's husband Pat came too, and then, you know, he also cut down a part of the beam which is hanging to our neighbor's house, which was a relief. So now we wanted to start little by little cleaning up. But yeah, also,
Yeah,
yeah.
taking down the whole, like basically dismantling the whole situation from the roof downwards. And yeah, able and hopefully able and willing to help people will assemble. And so we try to do things like that with friends and friends of friends coming. We will see how it goes. But so far, our experience actually in that department is really great. There were so many volunteers, friends coming heroically, really up in the beginning. It was quite a task to come up here because the streets were in such bad condition. It took hours and hours and hours, and people came up and brought water, gasoline, and you know things necessary, and came again and again and brought each and every time more friends of theirs to help, and that continues. So to see that is really encouraging, and to meet the people we otherwise would never have met, I guess, is a quite enriching experience, and kind of counterbalances not so good experience in other fields, like how officials, for example, handle the situation, which seems quite, I don't know, hard to understand. I would never have guessed that in a country like Japan, help comes so slowly and so, I don't know, seemingly incompetent. We hope that will change soon, but so far it's quite astonishing actually that for a country so rich, one would think so experienced with something like an earthquake, needs such a long time to help its citizens in, and most of them here are, you know, elderly, and they need help. And it's quite astonishing that that help from official sides comes so slowly. Hard to understand.
You said that in your area there were 300, about 280 people, and now 50 people. So a lot of people have left the area, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, who could went to family, friends, children, grandchildren, if they could, which I think to a large degree, especially in the beginning. But I mean, that's still the case that we don't have running water, and so yeah, people left, and but it now starts that some try to come back. So that number of roughly 50 or so at the moment living here may increase a little bit, but I don't think much, because the situation is just very, very unclear. It's very uncertain what will become of the whole neighborhood. And it's also very complex, very complicated, because our small town of Kurosima was, I don't know how many years ago, but quite a number of years ago, recognized as a historically important, also architectonically important area to be protected. So there is a protective status of the whole city. And what's the Japanese term of that?
Juden-ken, it's called, Juden-ken, we call it in a short term. Yeah, but that's there's only one area in Noto Peninsula. Yeah, so that means that it's it keeps that traditional housing, traditional look of the architectural housing mainly, and then you know there's also some temples and the shrines, but you know actually so there was a quite a large earthquake 17 years ago, and then on the process of rebuilding it, the community got together, and then they approached to the government to get the recognition. So they put their own fund with the government support, but you know, to restore the historical look when they are going to restore each houses. So we encouraging the community to keep the title. That means that you know each household has to be willing to restore in the way, and so we are in the process. We have been in holding meetings,
many meetings.
Yeah, and so that you know we can preserve this historical town as, or maybe not as is, but.
As much as makes sense.
So even if people have to rebuild, they should rebuild in the traditional style. Is that the idea?
That's mm-hmm. sort of the idea. That's probably only partially possible because obviously it's much more expensive to build in a traditional style than mm-hmm. it would be to put a prefab building up, which is done in most other places in Japan. Everywhere you look. And of course, if that would happen, then the whole atmosphere of this town would disappear pretty much. But it's a question how to do it. It's very, it's not an easy solution. It's not an easy situation because there are a good number, I would think close mm-hmm. to half of the traditional buildings in town are probably beyond repair, I think. Unless millions and millions would be poured in, which is not very likely. But we still hope that from official sides, it's understood what a unique setting this place is, and that they provide at least some solid, it needs to be solid funding to repair the buildings, at least to some degree, and those which are still easily repair or relatively easily repairable. Mm-hmm. That would help a lot already, but I guess the much, much more important part for a really long-term and sustainable future scenario is to create basically conditions which attract young people to move here and then to inhabit those traditional buildings. I mean, there's not much really in just renovating old buildings, put in a lot of money and efforts, and then there's no one living in. So I think that needs to be thought through as one concept in a way and developed as such. And I think there's a lot of potential, and we hope we can at least do our part in pushing things a little bit in those directions. Mm. Yeah.
So we... I think that it could be an opportunity, you know, if we could really push through to really think beyond the usual thinking, so that on the process of rebuilding the or restoring the house and the community, if we could implement like forward thinking, like making it sustainable and that's more environmentally friendly, and then you know with renewal energy, and but also that more stable for the earthquake, you know, so it could be a model case. And then actually Bernd outlined some of his suggestion, you know, it's like a, mm-hmm. at this point, it's almost like a dream vision or like a future, like a floating vision. But kind of we share with the community, and then we initiated a conversation along with our friends here. and tried to encourage, to join or like to create such a movement here. Yeah, so that's why we are, we are here, and then we are working, at the moment to create such a net positive thing out of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit by bit and piece by piece, a lot of conversations, a lot of meetings get our ideas across, and but also hear what other people think and how they relate to those ideas and so on. It's a long, demanding process, and we try to keep our good moods up and remain progressive, because I think as devastating as the destruction has been here, and it's visible all over, it's of course in many other places on Noto as well, so, or in some places look even more horrible, but this is again an image of that burned down section in central Wajima. So I mean, some areas look right just so devastating, you don't know where to start. And actually, there has been no start yet, really, in cleaning up, other than getting the streets passable, I guess. But we want to, or trying also for ourselves to make an effort to, yes, there is this massive destruction, unfortunately, happened, but that also provides an equally massive chance for the future, because it's so massive, something big has to happen. It's totally illusionary to think one could repair a little bit and then it's back as usual. That's not going to happen. It's impossible. It's not. There's no way of, so to speak, going back. There's probably also no point in going back. But so because that's the situation, I think it's worth to really try to explore with a sort of fresh mind and not follow patterns as has been applied in other regions hit by disasters of one sort or other, which often do not work out, or only to some degree, and in some cases totally not. They put millions and millions and many, many efforts, years and years into it, and then people didn't move in because it was just an idea which was not connected to the reality of the lives of the people there. And so therefore, I think if one would really honestly try to approach the situation here new and understand that this is a chance, and tries to come up with ideas which are progressive, and as Mitya just pointed out, in thinking about sustainability, thinking about independent energy and things like that, it's all possible. The potential is all here. I'm absolutely certain, or we are absolutely certain about that. It just needs the political will to do so, and to dare to think in those directions and then actually act in those directions. But that's what we hope for, at least to some degree. I mean, it doesn't have to totally become a dreamlike item. It would be nice, but I think there's a lot of potential, and we hope we can help moving things in those directions a little. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, we have some great examples. Like, I'm from Hiroshima. I'm in Hiroshima. Hiroshima completely rebuilt the city in a way that was more comfortable and high quality of living for people who stayed. Mm-hmm. And so if someone has a vision to recreate this area with a high quality of life, you're going to create a very sustainable place to stay. So we have pedestrianized areas, we have cycle-friendly areas, we have good public transportation, all of these things that people really need to be happy in their lives and reduce emissions and more environmentally friendly, right? And put the connection also with tourism, right? If you're going to recreate your traditional village or community, but with, like Alex Kerr always talks about, right? Pull it into the modern, things that we need, like insulation and maybe barrier-free, because you have a lot of elderly people, and make it accessible, right, for wheelchairs or people who have trouble walking, as mm-hmm. well as renewable energy. I mean, it seems like a great opportunity for a big company like Panasonic or Toyota, who are talking about future tech, but make it relevant and beautiful with traditional Japanese architecture as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the ideas we had just as a related to what you just said is to, because there's so many houses obviously collapsed or badly damaged, so a lot of repairs is needed, and therefore craftsmanship able to work in these traditional methods on one hand. On the other hand, it would be great to combine those qualities of traditional houses with cutting-edge technology. And one idea was to install a sort of a, I want to say, you know, being German, a Bauhaus sort of a situation, in a creative way of connecting traditional craft traditions, with contemporary life, basically, and future oriented. So if one could do that, if one could set that up, that would provide for those few craftsmen who are often very, very old, in their 70s and 80s and older, to pass on their abilities to young people eager to learn, to sort of have sort of a school system with workshops and so on, and a large field of places those techniques can and should be applied to. We have so many places and ruins here, you can endlessly play around, possibly, at least for the next couple of years. And then combine that, as you said, with cutting-edge technology in terms of energy, in terms of insulation, and so on and so forth. I think the potential is there, and if one puts that together in a smart way, that would attract people, young people, to come to learn. And some of them, probably not all, but some of them probably would fall in love to this place as we have, and maybe choose to stay. And so that could be one seed of a new community well reaching into the future. And I think it would be very meaningful, and there is a lack of craftsmanship, so that would be something very needed here. There's endless work, basically. So, there are some conditions which I think point to directions like that. And if one would pick them up and put smartly together, that could be exciting, very exciting, actually.
Alex mentioned we were trying to coordinate to he be on this show, and hopefully we can do that sometime. But he mentioned that he had just written about this area in his last book.
Yeah.
Area, because it's so famous for lacquerware, and it's such a beautiful historical place of heritage. And then I was talking recently to Emily Kaneko, who's an amazing plasterer. And she was saying she was learning traditional plastering techniques in Japan, but it was very difficult to find someone to teach her. Yeah. She found a plastering student school, but now that's closed. So there are so many people, tourists or new people, who want to come and live in Japan and learn the traditional crafts, but there's so few opportunities to do that. So you're absolutely right, Bern, this would be a great opportunity. Yeah.
Let's hope someone from the government is listening. And we also try actively to reach out to people in the culture ministerians who are kind of in charge in a way to the future of this place. But it's very, very difficult to get ideas like that across. to find people. I mean, I hope there are some, but in those higher political realms who are open to progressive ideas. You know, it's very, very hard fight to a degree, and one needs a lot of hope and encouragement. But I mean, maybe even internationally, some pressure can be built up. Because in some of these fields, it seems it's so much more obvious for people like us from the outside or with a different cultural background, looking at the situation and understanding actually what a tremendously rich culture has been here for centuries and is on the brink to die. And if we don't do anything now, it will die. And once it's dead, you can't reactivate it really. As once anything is dead, you can't reactivate it really. So this is sort of in a time sensitive way the last opportunity to just connect the oldest of craft people, masters of their craft, still able, and young people eager to learn. And if that chances, I mean, that was the case, I guess, 10 years ago, one could say the same thing. And very little has happened. Some have. I mean, they are here and there projects in those departments, but by far not enough. And not, I think, protected. I mean, there's no protected environment like a school, for example, which could create a realm where things like that happen and interact, which I think is the future anyways. So that's one of the projects we just cooked up in a brainstorming situation, but there are a number of other ideas which I think are potentially possible to approach, but they're all big, and but I think this situation requires big thinking, and we still hope.
We're even thinking about perhaps, you know, initiate some kind of a foundation to really actualize such an idea. And because when we decided to move to Noto 2.5 years ago, and then, you know, I grew up in a newly developed part of Japan, and then, you know, in prefabricated house, and then, of course, you know, it has its good, and then, but also, since I moved here, you know, I fell in love with this type of living in a traditional house. And then I had learned so much, you know, by living in this community. And then people are still so connected to the nature. And then even the housing, you know, it still keeps, you know, the way it had been living. So I think to preserve this type of living is very critical, I feel. So that's why we started to bring in, you know, friends and a guest, you know, to here, and then we also encouraged our friend to move to this area, and then we are really hoping to, you know, create some places that people can experience, you know, authentic Japanese or authentic way of living with the nature. And this happened, and then But we haven't given up. So, if the process of aging and then depopulating is fast forwarded, you know, we knew that it was approaching, and we had this feeling that, oh, we have to do something about it. But, you know, instead of that process to take 10 years, now we really are faced to do something, you know, otherwise it will be replaced with, you know, something completely different, you know, without us, you know, having a choice. So we are feeling quite desperate to really start bringing awareness and talk with the community, and then, you know, do something about it. So,
It's powerful, isn't it? It's powerful hearing it from you two, because you came from Kyoto. You have lived all over the world, right? And you, like you said, Mitsue, you grew up in a city, and you are really drawn to this area. Mm-hmm. And you're very passionate about rebuilding it with value, with heritage, right?
Yeah.
And that will attract more people, right? So if someone can just, who has the funding, have the same vision and create this wonderful community, it really would stand out in Japan. There's so few places like that, right?
Yeah,
I mean, if it works even partially or in fractions, works out in a progressive way, then that indeed could be, people say model case, but I would rather say an inspiration for others to also try to think what might be an appropriate thing for their region to do without a disaster necessarily happening. But, you know, I mean, the overaging problem is all over the country, all over the world, actually, at least in so-called developed countries. So that really could be a chance, you know, reaching far into the future as a source of inspiration, really.
And then with this, you know, what became so apparent, you know, for us is that, you know, how much connection and then the support we have. I mean, you know, we have friends, you know, all over the world, and then, but, you know, we are, of course, in touch. But after this, you know, we get so many messages and also people sending funding for us, and then, you know, a friend of ours, you know, encouraged us to, you know, set up the funding, you know, the platform to receive funding so that we can rebuild, you know, our life here and then also extend to the community. And then, you know, packages arriving from, you know, Tokyo and even from United States. And then, I mean, it just is so overwhelmingly, you know, how much care we receive. So really, it's supporting us to really stay strong and then, you know, hopeful. And then with that, we also feel, you know, quite responsible to, you know, keep our sanity here and then, you know, do something positive because we have been receiving so much. So, yeah, we are so grateful. Yeah. There's something you it's kind of not hidden, but, you know, it wasn't that obvious, but it became so obvious, you know, to us, you know, how much care we have, you know, from our friends and family. Also, yeah, also with new friends that we're making and then people from the, you know, experience, you know, from Tohoku, the earthquake, you know, in the Tohoku area, you know, people from Iwate or, many people who came here and to deliver some vegetables and also some knowledge experiences. And then, you know, all over Japan, you know, people are coming and then, you know, constantly kind of supporting.
Yeah, it's really great experience.
Yeah.
Really.
That's amazing. I'm so happy to hear people have been reaching out and supporting you guys. Now, Mitsue, I mentioned that you're such a great photographer, and it must be really sad, but you're using your skills with your camera to document what you see around you. As I show these photos, can you guys just talk through what we're seeing?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Change here. How about this one?
Oh, this one I found is so cute that, you know, when we visited Suzu, so there's some people sending a fruit, and then some of the, it was a boxes of hasaku, citrus, and then they wrote the message with a marker to cheer people up.
On each of them.
And
whole
this is
box
like a
full.
Panda bear.
Oh, gorgeous.
And then also there's some actual messages in behind. So, yeah, I took a picture of it. Yeah.
I'm sure that really encouraged people, like the messages written on the peel. I love it.
Yeah. Put the smile on our face.
Yeah, it was
yeah.
Yeah.
So lovely.
Oh, this one, Suzu. We visited this area in Suzu, which hit by tsunami, actually. And then, somehow, you know, I got encouraged by, local people, actually, to please document. So it was very difficult at the beginning, but also Bernd encouraged me to really apply, non-biased seeing, of my practice of Miksan, and then, yeah, so that's how I did that. This is the roof. Many houses are completely collapsed, and then, this is nearby our house.
Mm-hmm,
then,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, old house, but completely collapsed, and then see just the roof. And yeah, like this too. This is also Toge, so that's mm-hmm. also close to our house, and then, many houses.
This would be a case, I think, that's beyond repair. You can't repair this. This is too badly damaged.
It's interesting to see some places where the tile stayed mm-hmm. on, and then other places where the tile completely came off. Right?
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. it's the Kurushima, one of the typical architectonical details of Kurushima is that more or less all buildings are with this black glazed tiles, the roofs are. And if they are older than, I would say, 30 years or so, they were not anchored, as in this case, mm. to the roof. So they are not kind of netted together. And so they fell off like crazy. I mean, streets were impassable because of that. Most old buildings, which were not redone within the last, 20 years, 30 years, they had these old type of tiles, and they were just falling off, basically. And newer ones are interlocked somehow, so they are more stable. Luckily, our house was entirely newly, got a new roof about 15 years ago, and so, and we have some broken tiles, of course, but nothing fell off, really.
Yep.
But by the way, these tiles are one of the reasons why so many houses collapse, because they're way too heavy for the support construction underneath, unfortunately.
I heard that some of the earthquake damage was maybe preventable if people had done earthquake supports of the beams and things, but that was really expensive. So that was one reason people didn't do it, right?
Yeah. It's one reason, and the other reason, I mean, these type of houses, also ours, were mostly done between 150 and 80 years ago or so. I think more than half or so of the buildings, traditional buildings in town. And at that time, Noto was known as not very prone to earthquakes. So they didn't think of a building, originally the houses, earthquake proof, as in other regions.
Right.
This, by the way, this image is back actually our backyard, so to speak. So it's from the scene from the shore side, from the ocean side. Towards that Kura on the right-hand side, the half-collapsed thing leaning on the Naya. That's our Kura, which we're going to dismantle hopefully next weekend. And the left-hand side is our neighbor's Kura, of which the back walls all collapse into our garden, is quite a disaster. Huge buildings.
In this earthquake,
And these are some of the,
some lacquer. Of the
lacquer.
You know, like, Harry is famous for lacquer, right?
Yeah.
We've been seeing a lot of beautiful traditional lacquer in the ruins. Yeah. It's so sad.
I mean, we were able to save some, and we actually also initiated a project to encourage owners of Kuras, which are, let's say, half collapsed, so still accessible, that we can save some of the treasures inside. It's a very delicate issue because it's based on trust in the end, and many people don't even know what they have in their kudas, and unfortunately, there's also a good number of owners who do not care that much, so they may just give order to some company to clear it all away. And once such a company come, it's time is money, and there is no way of sorting out things. So we try to do that before those companies move in and rip everything apart.
But nowadays, there's it's a time, for people to clear up, what is damaged, from inside the house to the outside, and then now it feels like, you know, people are really rushing to get rid of what is unwanted or damaged. And then we see a lot of, you know, old furniture. Some are treasure, some are historical, some has a historical value, but it's thrown away as a garbage.
Yeah.
Some are damaged and then some are not necessarily damaged.
Some are only being damaged in the process of throwing them out. And then it was raining quite a bit last week. So, you know, wooden, old wooden furniture things in the rain, or even Biobus, these folding screens or so, they're just being thrown out onto the street or so. This is actually from the inside of our house, the front window or set of shoji windows. This is how, weirdly enough, how shoji looks like after an earthquake. These kind of almost seemingly seismographic wave patterns, which it's eerie, but I think also it's beautiful. So
it's we see this pattern in many, many shoji screens, you know, all over.
Yeah, that's I mean, some are more drastically ripped apart, of course, but here it was held in place quite nicely. So maybe
it's
we'll keep
fascinating
those.
That pattern, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And then the ocean.
Oh, the ocean. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. It is.
So it was also, especially during the first couple of days, because this was all underwater, obviously. So we had many, many birds coming because it was a richly, it was a lot of food for them.
Shellfish,
to
sea urchin, abalone, and
A lot of delicacies for them and for us too, a little bit.
But the ocean.
Also part of the new emerged seascape.
It feels almost strange because it's you are.
Is that me walking there?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's Bernd walking. So Bernd has this routine to go for a walk, you know, in the ocean, and now, you know, he's walking on the surface that it was underwater. Yeah. So, yeah, it looks like this, and then it feels very, I don't know.
It's very beautiful.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, really beautiful. It almost like a brand new. So this is the, you see the wall of the harbor. And then, so it's a concrete wall, you know, to
protect
mark
the harbor.
Yeah, protect the harbor or mark the harbor. And now the boat cannot go out because, of course, you know,
there's
it's
no water.
Yeah, there's no water. Yeah. Anyhow.
It's absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for sharing all of those wonderful, wonderful but devastating photos. But it shows, like Bernd and Mitsue, you've been talking about the opportunities, right? Like now you have a new landscape to look at. Now you have opportunity to rebuild and decide how to rebuild your community. So I love that positive perspective that you have. And I wish we could help more. I wish I was closer and I could come in my car, you know? I mean, well, you said you don't have water now. What other things do you need? If you start your foundation, of course, we can definitely get the word out and start sending money to your foundation.
Yeah, we actually also today had a meeting in that regard in Kanazawa to discuss how best to set up a foundation, which in our case would focus on the cultural aspects to encourage, on one hand, to you know, save old things and traditions here, which are rooted here, but also to support new things come in, art and artisanship, and so that probably will be the main focus of the foundation. And we also want it to be internationally content-wise, but also supporter-wise. So once we are at that point, it will probably take some time to set it up, but we are in the process of, and hope it will flourish somehow and make a difference.
You said you've been receiving packages of support. What things are you happy to get or do you need more of? Is there anything we can send?
I don't know. I cannot think of anything. Like, you know, I received this sweater and then, you know, we got the warm socks and then also good foods and then some vitamins and then, you know, all those things. And then also, you know, things to remind to put a smile on our face, you know, something.
Yeah, it's maybe not even, of course, we are very happy to receive all those goodies, but it's really the gesture which is most touching in a way. I mean, it's that people make the effort and send us things from far or from close by, it doesn't matter, but the gesture is overwhelming quite for us, and it means a lot actually. That's the actual support, I would say.
But that's true. And then also, you know, this weekend, you know, our friends will be coming to help us deal with Akura. You know that is a tremendous help.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And really physical work, hard work.
Right. Yeah. And then also, you know, sharing the information and then, you know, encouragement and then, you know, those things are very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
to get word out into the world, because not only internationally, of course, the earthquake is long over. I mean, other pressing issues have taken over pretty quickly. But even in Japan, it's not very central on the news at all any longer. And for the people here who actually lost everything, I mean, a lot of people lost everything, and they are just in a desperate situation and are almost unnoticed in a way which hurts, really. I mean, it's to spread the actual facts of this situation, including the potentials it has, but also that there is very, very urgent need to actual help for many, many in desperate situations.
Right. Yeah.
And that will, of course, last for months, if not years, to come. So there's endless work and endless opportunities for good work to be done.
Yeah. We are luckier.
Well, hopefully we can have information to give at the Minka Summit, which is coming up in April. Maybe you can have information about your foundation. Even if you can't go, we can help spread the word there and maybe send you some volunteers. There might be people interested in helping out.
Thank you.
Anything helps, basically.
And of course, if we send fruit, we're going to make messages on it. I love that idea.
Yes.
That's fantastic. We have a great comment from Wendy. Thank you for giving us a perspective from within the disaster area and sharing your vision for the future. The situation is so much more complex than I imagined. Wishing you all the best with your foundation. Thank you so much, Wendy.
Thanks,
Wendy.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Well, it's almost our time. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to mention before we sign off?
The final wish. I think maybe an important thing to approach any small or big activity in the future, I think a big difference is that with an experience like that, it becomes clear that it might be far better to approach things in a humble mindset rather than a mindset which is more sort of 19th century, to think we have everything under control. You know, if there's a tsunami 8 meters high, we build a wall 10 meters high. That's not the right way. I mean, that failed so many times, and I think it's high time to change that and to be far more sensitive, far more humble, far more honest, and at the same time daring for progressive approaches towards the future. I think that's would be good to go rather in that direction than in the direction of we know it all and we can control everything. We can't.
So I think along the line of course, you know, there's things, but, you know, also bringing so much awareness about, you know, daily our priority, and then our, what is it, what we value the most is challenged. And then, so I think with that, you know, I have, how can I say? Yeah, you have become clear that it is important to have a network of friends, and then, you know, the like-minded people to share the ideas. And then we have been having a quite a honest and open conversations, you know, more so than before. And because, you know, our value is challenged, and then also we check in, you know, what's your value and what is it? And then, you know, that way of communication and have become such a importance. So, yeah, we hope that it will be continued, and then we can, you know, kind of create something, how can I say?
Meaningful.
Meaningful, that's right, meaningful. And so we really appreciate having this opportunity, you know, to talk in this media.
Yeah.
Again, so yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining and reminding us that, you know, even though Noto Peninsula is kind of out of the news cycle right now, you guys are still going through so much and you still need a lot of support. And like you said, Bern, it's going to be this year, the whole year, you're going to need a lot of support and volunteers and visionaries who can think of Indeed. The way for the future, right?
Indeed, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So best of luck to you guys. I'm so happy you guys are there as one of the founding 50 who are passionate about rebuilding. It's so important to have people on the ground who have the good vision, right?
Yeah. We hope to talk about a great outcome in the future, years hopefully. To come. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fingers crossed. Well, thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for joining today and great comments and questions. Of course, if you have any more comments and questions, please add them below and we'll make sure that we reply. Thanks, everyone. Thank you so much, Bernd and Mitsue. Thank you.
Thank you
for your time.
Okay.
Have a great night, everyone. See you next time.
Bye.
Okay. Streaming in.